London Column. This is Peter Watson once again presenting a weekly radio digest of items headlined or modest, but all selected for your interest and entertainment from the worldwide services of the BBC. London Column. London Column this week brings you voices, distinguished and distinctive voices, the voices of King George, of Queen Elizabeth, of the Prime Minister, and of that terror of the private soldier, the Sergeant Major. Well, since the King himself often waves his own president over his Queen and bows her forward, let's follow his example now and take you to Birkenhead in Cheshire, where at one of Britain's biggest shipyards, another mighty aircraft carrier for the Royal Navy is standing on the slipway, awaiting a royal launching by Her Majesty. For nearly 400 years now, the name Ark Royal has been honoured in the Royal Navy and well respected by Britain's foes. Here at Birkenhead, surrounded by a forest of towering derricks, stands the fourth and the greatest ship to bear that name, the successor to that Ark Royal so many times sunk in German dispatches and eventually a victim of German torpedoes during World War II. Tens of thousands of spectators packing the surrounding acres as our reporter Winford Vaughan Thomas describes the naming ceremony for us.
Her Majesty the Queen, looking radiant and dressed in her favourite light blue, is standing now with Sir Robert Johnson, the chairman of Camel Lairds, on a dais decorated with red and gold and the royal arms, and high above them and high overhead too, dwarfing the enormous crowd that's assembled around the slipway, towers the new Ark Royal herself, the fourth of the line, and lifting that clear-cut prow of hers 100 feet overhead. And now the bugles of the Band of the Royal Marines gives the signal for the start of the dedication ceremony to be performed by the Bishop of Chester.
Dedication, a hymn borne on the vibrant air from thousands of throats, a final benediction, and the moment arrives. Sir Robert Johnson, chairman of the shipbuilding company, addresses himself to the Queen.
Your Majesty, I have great pleasure in asking you to name and launch this great ship.
The traditional bottle of champagne is well and truly broken on the bow of Ark Royal. Her Majesty's given the signal, and slowly, almost imperceptibly, we can see the bows moving, and there she goes down the slipway.
The opening of what is certainly the biggest medical research centre in the British Commonwealth is also an occasion for royal patronage, and His Majesty the King, the Queen with him after her return from the Ark Royal launching, His Majesty the King was present at Mill Hill in North London to declare open the National Institute for Medical Research, where soon more than 600 workers, including many leading scientists, will be working for the benefit of our health and that of the world at large. To a gathering of scientists and medical practitioners and research workers at Mill Hill, the King could give an encouragement backed by his own personal experiences of results already achieved.
The work of the Institute exemplifies that spirit which inspires the state and science to work together for the health and happiness of mankind. The results of this union are available to all without distinction of race, or color or creed. And many families have at home, and indeed throughout the world, have reason to be grateful for the benefits which have been brought about by medical research. I can tell you personally that I am indeed thankful and grateful for the work of this institute. For I am told that had it not been for medical research, I should not be standing here on my two legs today.
And now we glance forward 1 year to 1951, when the Festival of Britain will be underway. Preparations for this festival year have been growing apace, and with many organizational burdens being shouldered by voluntary societies, for their representatives from all over the country, a party at Lancaster House in London was given by Mr. Astley, who expressed his thanks and spoke of the basic objects of the Festival of Britain.
First of all, I think we want to show pride in our past. But we don't only dwell on the past. We want to show, too, that this old country of ours is alive and active in every field of human endeavor at the present. We want to show, too, our hopes for the future. And we shall also be showing, I think, how people of diverse views, diverse activities, can work together for the common good. And then finally, our purpose is to show hospitality to our friends who will be visiting us from overseas. I hope that this exhibition is going to be a means of drawing the nations together, of promoting understanding. And the hospitality that this country will be giving will not what may be done only by government, depend on what's being done by individuals. Britannia in 1950 will be at home. The old lady will show her medals. We want to give a very warm welcome to all those who are coming and to show them the best that our country can offer.
Yes, and another voice. No, not Jerry Colonna, but little reporter Rennie Cutforth, tell you who.
Well, that magnificent word of command, "Eyes right," was given by the most famous military voice in Great Britain, and it belongs to Regimental Sergeant Major Ronald Britton of the Coldstream Guards. He's with me here at the microphone on the Barrack Square in Wellington Barracks at the moment. And, Mr. Britton, you're a very large man. Would you mind telling me what your height is?
6'3½".
And what do you weigh?
Just over 20 stone.
You must be just about the biggest man here, in fact, the biggest man in the barracks.
I think I am.
Well, do you think that's got anything to do with your powerful voice? Do you think it's a question of weight at all?
Weight behind the voice, yes.
You think it does?
Yeah. Well, now, how long have you been in the army? Well, it's my 32nd year in the Coldstream Guards, and I was 2 years in the South Wales Borders before that.
And how long have you been a regimental sergeant major for?
16 years.
16 years? Now, tell me, do you do anything to keep your voice in trim? Do you do any training?
Oh, I try to keep as fit as I possibly can. And quite frankly, I don't burn the candle at both ends.
But you don't take any special precautions to keep your voice in condition?
I keep my neck warm and occasionally gargle.
And after one brief gargle and a polite cough, Sergeant Major Britton put all his 280 pounds into one parting word of command.
Guard! Guard!
Which gentle word seems to have blown London columnist Alan Melville almost out of the studio. Pick it up, Alan, and come and give us your postscript, will you?
This is Alan Melville speaking. There's something emotionally stirring as well as visually exciting about the launching of a ship.
Helen of Troy, it will be remembered, was the happy possessor of a face which in its day, and according to the best authorities, was responsible for the launching of no fewer than 1,000 ships. And I suppose had she been two-faced, she would have got through the work in half the time. But I can't believe that even when Helen was well up in the 900s and all set for the record, she could ever have become bored by her sterling work on behalf of the Trojan Admiralty. There are two things which never fail to fascinate me about a launching ceremony. One is the miracle whereby a ship of many thousand tons is held upright, rigid, and in position until the precise moment that the champagne is cracked against her bows, defying, so it seems, the law of gravity, being kept there until a few puny, paltry props are knocked away. But when the props do go, what a wonderful sight. The first slow, almost imperceptible movement, the gathering of speed down the slipway, the plunge into the water to the accompaniment of cheers, tears, bands, and small children being plucked back out of reach of the resulting tidal wave, the terrible moment when it seems that she'll never right herself, and the wonderful moment when she does, when she settles calmly and graciously on the water, letting the tugs fuss round her, as though saying, "Oh, that's much better. Now I am in my element." The second great fascination is, of course, the bottle of champagne itself, partly because champagne, apart from one or two bad years, such as 1940, is always fascinating, and partly because of the element of doubt in hurling the bottle. There are still some ladies, very few I'm sure, but there are still some, who remain feminine enough not to be able to throw straight, at any rate not overhand. Put a cricket ball in their hand and tell them to throw it at point A, and about the only place you're safe in standing is dead on point A. Well, so it is with some of the distinguished ladies who are invited to launch ships. They are capable of missing even the largest vessels, and when they do, there's always the chance of the bottle swinging back and knocking out the mare. Even should they manage to hit, say, an aircraft carrier or a 40,000-ton liner first go from a distance of about 4 feet, there still remains this element of chance, for certain champagne bottles are remarkably impregnable, bouncing happily off the steel plates of a ship with nary a dent or a dimple. But when the bottle is broken and the guard speeds are said and the ship gains speed down the last few yards of terra firma we hope it'll touch for many years, well, even the most hard-boiled of us must admit to a lump in the throat getting slightly in the way of the cheering. So long, that is, as the ship is launched properly. None of this modern, ungraceful sideways launching, dumping a vessel into the water as though she were a sack of coals. Well, this week's column has noted three launching ceremonies. One, the proud new owner of a great name, His Majesty's ship, Ark Royal. And two, dry land, but important undertakings, the Festival of Britain and the new Medical Research Centre. Good luck to all three and to all who sail, work, heel, or are heeled in them. And no doubt that whispering baritone who rounded off the column has launched a great many guardsmen on a great many gallant careers. So good luck to him, too. Goodbye.
And it's goodbye, too, from this edition of London Column. A Radio Digest presented by Peter Watson, produced by Stephen Eckard, and which came to you in the North American service of the BBC.
That was London Column, a transcribed program. This is the British Broadcasting Corporation.